for your exams?
Sure. Yeah, right.
I haven't even cracked open a book yet. Mom sees right through the noncommittal response. Don't BS your mother, Johnny.
Fine, I haven't started yet, I admit. But you know I work better under pressure. Can you hold on a sec?
Yep.
I set the phone down and drop my towel, then yank a pair of sweatpants up my hips. My hair is still wet, sprinkling droplets down my bare chest, so I rub the towel over my head before picking up the phone again. Back, I tell her. So how's work going? How's David?
Good and great.
For the next 10 minutes, she chats about her job. She's a manager at a restaurant in Boston, then tells me what my stepfather has been up to. David is an accountant, and he's so boring that sometimes it's painful to be around him. But he also loves my mother with all his heart and treats her like the queen she is, so I can't exactly hate the guy. Eventually, she gets around to my summer plans, taking on that guarded tone she always uses when she brings up the subject of my father.
So I take it you're working with your dad again?
Yep. I make an effort to sound relaxed. My brother and I agreed a long time ago to keep the truth from Mom. She doesn't need to know that Dad is drinking again, and I refuse to dredge up that old bullshit for her. She got out, and she needs to stay out. She deserves to be happy now, and boring as he is, David makes her happy. Ward Logan, on the other hand, made her miserable. He didn't hit her or abuse her verbally, but she was the one who had to clean up his messes. She was the one who had to deal with his drunken tantrums and constant visits to rehab. The one who dragged him off the floor when he came home wasted and passed out in the front hall. Fuck. I'll never forget the time when I was 8 or 9, and Dad called the house at 2 in the morning. He'd been slurring like a maniac and freaking out because he'd drunk himself stupid at a bar, gotten in the car, and had no idea where he was. It had been the dead of winter, and Mom hadn't wanted to leave my brother and me at home alone, so she'd bundled us up, and the three of us drove for hours searching for him. With only half a street name to go on because the sign had been covered in snow, and Dad was too drunk to walk over and wipe it away. After we'd found him and hauled him into the car, I remember sitting in the back seat feeling something I'd never felt before. Pity. I felt sorry for my father. And I can't deny I was relieved when Mom shipped him back to rehab the next day.
I hope he's paying you accordingly, sweetie, Mom says, sounding upset. You and Jeffrey work such long hours at the garage.
Of course he's paying us, but accordingly? Fuck no. I make enough to pay for rent and expenses during the school year, but definitely not what I should be making for full-time work.
Good.
She pauses.
Can you still take a week off to come visit us?
I'm planning on it, I assure her. Jeff and I have already worked out a schedule so that each of us can head to Boston to spend some time with Mom. We talk for a few more minutes, and then I hang up and wander downstairs to find something to eat. I prepare a bowl of cereal, the no-sugar, all-bran Boarfest that Tuck forces us to eat because for some reason he's against sugar. As I settle at the eat-in counter, my mind instantly travels back to what happened last night. Leaving Grace's room 5 seconds after she jerked me off had been such an asshole move. I know that. But I had to get out of there. The second I'd recovered from that orgasm, my first thought had been, what the hell am I doing here? Seriously. I mean, yeah, Grace was awesome, and sexy, and funny. But have I sunk so low that I'm now randomly finger-banging chicks I don't even know? And I can't even use alcohol as an excuse this time because I was stone-cold sober. And the worst part? She didn't even fucking come. I clench my teeth at the reminder. There'd been a lot of moaning, sure, but I'm 99% certain that she didn't have an orgasm, despite her telling me that she had. Or rather, lying to me that she had. Because when a woman drops a non-committal, uh-huh, after you ask if she had an orgasm, then that's called lying. And that half-assed, yeah, sure, me too, she gave about whether she had fun, talk about bruising a guy's ego. Not only did she not come, but my company didn't do it for her either. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I'm not an idiot. I don't live in a magical bubble where orgasms fall from the sky and land in a woman's bed every time she has sex. I know they fake it sometimes. But I'm fairly confident I speak for most guys when I say that I like to think they don't fake it with me. Damn it. I should have gotten her number. Why the hell didn't I get her number? I know the answer to that, though. This past month, I haven't cared enough to ask for a girl's number after a hookup. Or rather, I've been too wasted before, during, and after the hookup to remember to ask. The thud of footsteps from the corridor snaps me out of my thoughts, and I glance up in time to see Garrett stride into the kitchen. Morning, he says. Morning. I shove a spoonful of cereal into my mouth and do my best to ignore the instant jolt of discomfort, while at the same time hating myself for even feeling it. Garrett Graham is my best friend. For Christ's sake, I'm not supposed to feel uncomfortable around him. So what'd you end up doing last night? He grabs a bowl from the cupboard, a spoon from the drawer, and joins me at the counter. I chew before answering. I hung out with this girl. Watched a movie. Cool. Anyone I know? Nah, I just met her yesterday. And will probably never see her again because I'm a selfish lover and bad company, apparently. Garrett dumps some cereal into his bowl and reaches for the milk carton I left out. Hey, did you call that agent yet? No, not yet. Why not? Because there's no point. Because I haven't gotten around to it? My tone is harsher than I meant for it to be, and Garrett's gray eyes flicker with hurt. You don't have to bite my head off. It was just a question. Sorry. Real articulate. Stifling a sigh, I take another bite of cereal. A short silence settles between us until Garrett finally clears his throat. Look, I get it, okay? You didn't get drafted, and it sucks. But it's not like you're out of options. You're a free agent now, and you're not locked in with a team, which means you can sign with anyone if they want you. And they're totally going to want you. He's right. I'm sure there are lots of teams that would want me to play for them. I'm sure one of them would have even drafted me, if I'd entered the draft. But Garrett doesn't know that. He thinks I've been passed over these past 2 years, and have I mentioned what an asshole friend I am? I've been letting him think it, because, fucked up as it sounds, having my best friend believe I didn't get picked bums me out a hell of a lot less than admitting that I'm never going to play for the pros. See, Garrett had a choice about not opting in. He wanted to earn his degree without the temptation that comes with being drafted. A lot of college players choose to ditch school the moment a team holds the rights to them. It's hard not to when you've got a pro team pulling out all the stops to coax you into leaving college early. But Garrett's a smart guy. He knows he'd lose his NCAA eligibility if he did that, and he also knows that signing a contract with a team doesn't guarantee instant success, or even playing time. Hell, we both saw what happened to Chris Little, our teammate in freshman year. Dude gets drafted, goes pro, plays for half a season, and then a career-ending injury takes him out, permanently. Not only will Little never step foot on the ice again, but he spent every dime of his signing contract on his medical expenses. And last I heard, he went back to school to learn a trade. Welding or some shit. So, yup, Garrett's playing it smart. Me? I knew from the start I wouldn't be going pro. I mean, Gretzky went undrafted, and look at everything he accomplished. The guy's a legend. Arguably the best player in hockey history. Garrett is still talking, still trying to reassure me. And I'm torn between snapping at him to shut up and hugging the living shit out of the guy for being such an amazing friend. I do neither, choosing to placate him instead. And I'll call the agent on Monday. I lie. He offers a pleased nod. Good. The silence returns. We cart our empty bowls over to the dishwasher. Hey, we're going to Malone's tonight, Garrett says. Me, Wellesley, Tuck, and maybe Danny. You in? Can't. I've got to start studying for exams. It's sad, but I'm starting to lose count of all the things I'm lying to my best friend about.
Grace. I'm sorry, can you repeat that? Ramona stares at me in utter disbelief, her eyes so wide they look like two dark saucers. I shrug as if what I've just told her is no biggie. John Logan came over last night. John Logan came over last night? She echoes. Yes. He came to our dorm? Yes. You were in this room, and he walked in, and then both of you were here in this room. Yes. So John Logan showed up at our door and walked inside and was here with you. Here. Laughter bubbles in my throat. Yes, Ramona, we've established that he was here in this room. Her mouth falls open, then slams shut, then opens again to release a shriek that's so ear-splitting I'm surprised the water in my glass doesn't jiggle Jurassic Park style. Oh my God! She runs over to my bed and flops down. Tell me everything. She's still wearing her party clothes from last night, a teeny mini dress that rides up her thighs when she sits, and silver stilettos that she kicks away in an excited blur of legs. When Ramona had walked into our room, I'd lasted all of 3 seconds before spilling the news. But now, with her staring excitedly at me, reluctance jams in my throat. I'm suddenly embarrassed to tell her what happened last night because, well, I'm just going to say it because it was underwhelming. I had fun watching the movie with him, and I loved fooling around with him, at least until those final moments. But the guy got off and then left. Who does that? No wonder all his hookups take place at frat parties. The girls are probably too drunk to notice whether they have an orgasm or not. Too drunk to realize that John Logan is selling nothing but false advertising. But I already opened my big mouth, so now I have to follow through and give Ramona something. As she gawks at me, I explain how Logan showed up at the wrong door and ended up staying to watch a movie. You watched a movie. That's it? I feel my cheeks warm up. Well, another screech flies out of her mouth. Oh my God, did you fuck him? No, I'm quick to answer. Of course not. I hardly even know him. But, well, we did make out. I'm hesitant to disclose any more than that, but the revelation is enough to light up Ramona's eyes. She looks like a kid who's just gotten her first bicycle or a pony. You made out with John Logan? Yay, that is so awesome. Is he a good kisser? Did he take off his shirt? Did he take off his pants? Nope, I lie. My best friend can't sit still anymore. She hops off the bed and bounces around on the balls of her feet. I can't believe this. I can't believe I wasn't here to witness it. You're into voyeurism now? I ask dryly. If I'm voyeuring John Logan, yeah, I'd watch the two of you make out for hours. She gasps suddenly. Oh my God, text him right now and ask him to send you a dick pic. What? No. Ah, come on, he'll probably be really flattered and another gasp. No. Text him to invite him over tonight and tell him to bring Dean. I hate to rain on her parade, but considering the way Logan rushed off last night, I have no choice but to dump a bucket of cold water on Ramona's joy. I couldn't, even if I wanted to. I confess, I didn't get his number. What? She looks devastated. What is wrong with you? Did you at least give him yours? I shake my head. He didn't have his phone on him, and there wasn't an opportunity for me to give him my number. Ramona goes quiet for a moment. Sharp brown eyes focus on my face, narrowing, probing, as if she's trying to telepathically tunnel into my brain. I fidget self-consciously. What? Be honest, she says. Was he actually here? Shock slams into me. Are you kidding? When she offers a tiny shrug, my shock turns to horror. Why would I make that up? I don't know. She tucks a strand of dark hair behind her ear, her discomfort obvious. It's just, you know, he's older and hot, and you didn't exchange numbers. So that means I'm lying? I shoot to my feet, beyond insulted. No, of course not. She starts to backpedal, but it's too late. I'm already pissed off and heading for the door. Where are you going? She wails from behind me. Oh, come on, Gracie. I believe you. You don't have to storm out. I'm not storming out. I toss her a cool look over my shoulder, then grab my purse. I'm meeting my dad in 15 minutes. I really do have to go. Really? She says skeptically. Yes. I have to force myself not to scowl at her. But that doesn't mean I'm not super mad at you right now. She darts over and throws her arms around me before I can stop her, squeezing tight enough to impede the airflow to my lungs. It's one of her trademark forgive me hugs, which I've been on the receiving end of more times than I can count. Please don't be mad at me, she begs. I'm sorry I asked that. I know you wouldn't make it up, and when you get back, I want to hear all the details, okay? Yeah, okay, I mutter, not because I mean it, but because I want to get out of here before I smack her in the face. She pulls back, relief etched into her features. Awesome, then I'll see you late. I'm out the door before she can finish that sentence. Chapter 6. Grace. My dad hasn't arrived yet when I walk into the coffee hut, so I order a green tea at the counter and find us two comfy chairs in the corner of the room. It's Saturday morning, and the coffee house is deserted. I have a feeling most people are probably nursing hangovers from Friday night. As I settle on the plush armchair, the bell over the door chimes, and my father enters the room. He's wearing his trademark brown blazer and starched khaki pants, an outfit my mom refers to as his serious professor look.
Hi, honey. He greets me. Let me grab a coffee.
A minute later, he joins me in the corner, looking more harried than usual.
I'm sorry I'm late. I stopped by the office to pick up some papers and got cornered by a student. She wanted to discuss her term paper.
It's okay, I just got here. I pop open the lid of my cup and steam rises up to my face. I blow on the hot liquid for a moment, then take a quick sip. How was your week?
Chaotic. I was concerned with the quality of the papers that were being turned in, so I extended office hours for the students who had questions about the exam. I've been on campus until 10 o'clock every night.
I frown. You know you have a TA, right? Can't he help out?
He does. But you know I enjoy interacting with my students.
Yep, I do know that, and I'm sure that's why all his students love him so much. Dad teaches graduate-level molecular biology at Briar, a course you wouldn't think would be all that popular, and yet there's actually a waiting list to get into his class. I've sat in on a few of his lectures over the years, and I have to admit, he does have a way of making the ridiculously boring materials seem interesting. Dad sips his coffee, eyeing me over the rim.
So, I made reservations at Pharaoh's for Friday at 6:30. Does that work for the birthday girl?
I roll my eyes. I am so not a birthday person. I prefer low-key celebrations, or in a perfect world, no celebrations at all, but my mom is a birthday fiend. Surprise parties, gag gifts, forcing waiters to sing in restaurants. She's all about inflicting the greatest amount of torture possible. I think she gets a kick out of embarrassing her only daughter. But since she moved to Paris 3 years ago, I haven't been able to spend my birthday with her, so she's recruited my dad into taking over humiliation duties. The birthday girl will only agree to go if you can promise nobody will sing to her. He blanches.
Lord, do you think I want to sit through that? No way, honey. We'll have a nice, quiet dinner. And when you talk to your mom about it afterward, you can tell her a mariachi band came over to the table and sang for you. Deal. Are you sure you're okay that we're not having dinner on your actual birthday? If you want to celebrate on Wednesday night, I can cancel office hours.
Friday is fine, I assure him.
All right, then it's a date. Oh, and I spoke to your mom again last night.
He adds,
she asked if you've reconsidered changing your flight to May. She'd love to see you for 3 months instead of two.
I hesitate. I'm excited to visit mom this summer, but for 3 months? Even two is pushing it. That's why I insisted on coming back the first week of August, even though the semester doesn't start until the end of the month. Don't get me wrong, I adore my mother. She's fun and spontaneous and so bubbly and encouraging, it's like having your own personal cheerleader following you around waving her pom-poms. But she's also exhausting. She's a little girl in a grown woman's body, acting on her every whim without stopping to consider the consequences. Let me think about it, I answer. I need to decide if I have the energy to keep up with her. Dad chuckles.
Well, we both know the answer to that is no. Nobody has the energy to keep up with your mom, honey.
He certainly hadn't, but luckily their divorce had been 100% amicable. I think when Mom told him she wanted out, Dad was more relieved than upset. And when she decided to move to Paris in order to find herself and reconnect with her art, he'd been nothing but supportive. I'll let you know this weekend, okay? I reach for my tea, but my hand freezes when the bell rings again. A dark-haired guy in a briar hockey jacket strolls in, and for one heart-stopping moment, I think it's Logan. But nope, it's someone else. Shorter, bulkier, and not as devastatingly gorgeous. Disappointment flutters through me, but I force it away. Even if Logan had walked through that door, what would I really expect to happen? He'd come over and kiss me? Ask me out? Right. I made the guy come last night, and he didn't even stick around long enough to kiss me goodbye. So, yeah, I have to face the facts. I'm just another girl on a long list of John Logan's conquests. And honestly, I'm totally cool with that. As underwhelming as it may have been, getting, conquered by Logan is hands down the highlight of my freshman year.
Logan. Has a girl ever faked an orgasm with you? I blurt out. It's 8 o'clock on Monday morning, and I nervously tap my fingers on the kitchen counter as I look at my roommate. Dean, who was on his way to the fridge, stops in his tracks so abruptly that if he'd been on skates, I'd be wiping ice shavings off my face right now. I'm sorry, didn't hear you. What was that? His expression is the epitome of innocence. So it's not until after I repeat myself that I realize I'm being played. Dean doubles over, honest to God tears streaming down his cheeks as he shudders with laughter. I totally heard you the first time, he croaks. I just wanted to hear you ask it again. Oh shit, I think I might piss myself. Another howl rips out of his throat. You tapped a girl and she faked it? I clench my teeth so hard my molars hurt. What on earth had made me think confiding in Dean was a good idea? No, I mutter. He's still laughing like a maniac. How do you know she faked it? Did she tell you afterward? Oh God, please say yes. I stare into my coffee cup. She didn't tell me anything. I just got a feeling, okay? Dean opens the fridge and grabs a carton of OJ, still chuckling to himself. This is priceless. Big stud on campus, couldn't make a girl come. You've officially given me enough ammo to rag on you for years. Yep, I sure did. Nobody ever said I was smart. And why the hell am I even still obsessing about this? All weekend I've fought the temptation to see Grace. I forced myself to study for exams. I played a 6-hour ice pro marathon with Tuck. I even cleaned my room and did laundry. And then I opened my eyes this morning and couldn't take it anymore. I've got moves, damn it. Women know that when they hook up with John Logan, they're going to leave with a satisfied smile on their faces. And it drives me crazy thinking that Grace might have been unsatisfied. It's been gnawing at me for days. Days, damn it. You know what? Screw it. I might not have her number, but I know where she lives. And there's no way I'll be able to concentrate on a damn thing today until I've rectified this unholy situation. Leaving a girl wanting isn't just embarrassing. It's unacceptable. 30 minutes later, I'm standing in front of Grace's door. Showing up at a girl's dorm at 8:30 in the morning might not be the best way to score points, but since my stupid ego refuses to let me walk away, I take a breath and tap my fist on the door. Grace opens it a second later, wearing nothing but a bathrobe. Her eyes widen when she sees me, her voice coming out in a squeak. "Hi." Swallowing, I do my best not to dwell on the fact that she's probably naked under that robe. The white terry cloth hangs to her knees, the belt secured tightly around her waist, but the top parts slightly, giving me a candid view of her cleavage. "Hi." My voice sounds gravelly, so I clear my throat. "Can I come in?"
Sure.
She closes the door behind me, then turns around, an uneasy smile playing on her lips.
"I don't have much time. My last psych seminar is in an hour, so I need to get dressed and hike all the way across campus."
"That's okay. I don't have a lot of time either. Study group in 30 minutes. I shove my hands in my pockets to stop from fidgeting. I'm nervous, and I have no idea why. I've never had a problem talking to chicks before.
"What's up?"
She nonchalantly grasps the front of her robe, as if she's realized it's dangerously close to gaping open. "You didn't finish, did you?" The question flies out before I can stop it.
"Finish what?"
She halts, a flush rising in her cheeks as understanding dawns.
"Oh, you mean?"
I grit my teeth and nod.
"Well, no,"
she confesses.
"I didn't."
I struggle to keep my mouth in a neutral, non-frown position. "Why'd you tell me you did?"
"I don't know."
She sighs.
"You were already done. And I guess I didn't want to damage your ego or anything. I was reading this article the other day about how men are sensitive about that kind of stuff, how it triggers feelings of inadequacy if a woman doesn't reach orgasm. But did you know that something like 10% of women don't have an orgasm during sexual activity? So going by that statistic, men really shouldn't feel like..."
You're doing that babbling thing again. Her expression is sheepish.
"Sorry."
"I don't mind it. I'm glad you're worried about my ego." I grin at her. "You should be." She looks startled.
"Why?"
"Because I've been thinking nonstop about how I didn't make you come last time." I shrug. "And how badly I want to change that." Chapter 7. Logan. Grace's cheeks go from lily white to pale pink in a matter of seconds. She's got the most expressive face I've ever seen, so quick to display everything she's feeling. I appreciate how easy it is to read her. Otherwise, her prolonged silence to my last remark might have worried me. But the glimmer of intrigue in her eyes confirms I haven't scared her off.
"Really?"
She wrinkles her forehead. "Yeah." My lips curve in a small smile as I take a step toward her. "So are you gonna let me or what?" Alarm flits across her face.
"Let you do what?"
"Make you come." I'm gratified to see the unease in her expression melt into molten hot excitement. Oh yeah, I'm not scaring her at all. She's turned on. She lets out a strangled laugh.
"This is the first time a guy has ever shown up at my door asking me that. You realize how freaking crazy that sounds, right?"
"You want to talk crazy? I've spent the whole fucking weekend fantasizing about doing this." Frustration rises in my chest. "I'm not usually such an asshole, okay? I might fuck around, but I always make sure the women I'm with have a good time." She sighs.
"I did have a good time."
"You would have had a better time if I didn't blow my load and take off." Now she laughs again, which makes me sigh. "You're killing me here, gorgeous." I'm talking about how much I want to give you a screaming orgasm, and you're laughing at me? I grin. Did we not just establish that my ego is fragile? Her lips continue to twitch.
I thought you had to go,
she reminds me. It takes 10 minutes to get to the library from here, which means I have 20 minutes. My smile becomes downright devilish. If I can't make you come in 20 minutes, then I'm definitely doing something wrong. Grace toys with a strand of wet, dark hair, visibly nervous. My gaze lowers to her lips, which glisten as her tongue darts out to moisten them. The urge to kiss her hums in my blood, and the anticipation hanging in the air is thick enough to tighten my throat. I take another step. So? Her breath shudders out in a rush.
Sure, if you want to.
A laugh pops out. Fuck yeah, I want to. But do you want it?
Yes.
She clears her throat.
Yes.
I move closer and her eyes flare again. She wants me. I want her too, but I order my rapidly hardening cock to behave. This ain't about us, bro. Only her. My dick twitches in response, but there's no way it's getting any action right now. If this was any other girl, I might suggest a quickie. But unless my V-dar is on the fritz, then Grace is most definitely a virgin. Not only do I not have that kind of time on my hands right now, but I'm also not particularly eager to take on the responsibility of being her first. But this, I reach for the sash of her robe and give it a slow tug. This, I'm more than capable of doing. And I plan on doing it right this time. I don't part the robe fully. I just slip one hand through the gap in the terry cloth and gently stroke the bare flesh of her hip. She shivers the moment I touch her. Her light brown eyes fix intently on my face, and when my palm conducts another featherlight sweep, she moans softly and moves in closer. Get on the bed, I rasp, gently nudging her backward. She sits on the edge of the mattress, but doesn't lie back. Her gaze stays focused on me, as if she's waiting for me to issue another order. Exhaling a breath, I kneel in front of her and give the robe one final tug, pushing it off her shoulders. The oxygen I'd just released sucks right back into my lungs. Holy fuck. Her naked body makes my cock ache. She's slender, with tiny hips, long, smooth legs, and smallish tits with the prettiest pink nipples. Saliva floods my mouth as I lean in to flick my tongue over one nipple. I can't help myself. I need to taste her. Oh, fuck. I groan against the distended bud before sucking it between my lips. Grace whimpers, arching her back and pushing her breast deeper into my mouth. Jesus, I want to suck and play with her tits all day long. I've always been a boob man, and the thought of staying right here in this position for all of eternity sends a sizzle of heat to the tip of my cock. But the reckless rocking of Grace's hips reminds me that time is of the essence. And goddamn, I'm not leaving until I make her come. I release her nipple with a wet sound and place my hands on her thighs. They tremble beneath my fingers, making me chuckle. You okay? She nods wordlessly. Satisfied that she's still on board, I spread her legs wider, slide lower to the floor, and bring my mouth to her pussy. Instant hard-on. Fuck, I love going down on a girl. The first time I did it, I was 15, and it turned me on so frickin' much I came in my pants. I'm not so quick on the trigger anymore, but I can't deny that the feel of Grace's slick, warm pussy beneath my tongue gets my dick harder than nobody's business. I lick her clit in a slow, teasing stroke that makes her moan. She falls back on her elbows, and I peer up to find that she's closed her eyes. Her lips are parted, her pulse visibly throbbing at the center of her throat, and that's all the encouragement I need to keep going. My tongue travels down her slit to her opening. She's soaking wet. Hell, maybe I should be worried about repeating the old coming in my pants fiasco, because my balls draw up so tight they damn near disappear. I clench my ass cheeks to control the wild tingling at the base of my spine and focus on making her feel good.
I lick my way back to the swollen bud that's begging for my attention, gently flicking my tongue against it, kissing and sucking, engaging her every response to find out what she likes. Slow and soft, I determine. Her moans are more desperate, and her hips rock harder when I tease her. Except teasing her is teasing me. And now my dick is pressed up painfully against my fly. Damn thing will probably bear the impression of my zipper by the time we're through. I ease the tip of my index finger inside her, and I'm immediately rewarded by a throaty cry. Good, I murmur, gazing up at her. Her eyelids are droopy.
Mm-hmm.
Satisfaction streaks through me, egging me on, making me even more determined to send her toppling over the edge. I resume my task, sweet, languid strokes to her clit while my finger inches deeper and deeper until it's finally lodged inside her. She's tight, really tight, and wet. God, really wet. And if she doesn't come soon, my pants are about to get wet too, because I'm so close to exploding that,
I'm coming,
she moans. And hell yes, she is. Her clit pulses against my tongue as her pussy squeezes my finger like a steel glove. She's not a screamer, not much of a moaner either, but the breathy sounds that leave her mouth are hotter than any porn star noises I've ever heard. I ride out the orgasm with her, stroking her inner channel and sucking on her clit as she shudders quietly on the bed. Several seconds later, she starts to laugh, squirming as she tries to move out of my grasp.
Too sensitive,
she chokes out. I lift my head with a grin. Sorry.
Oh my God, you are not allowed to say that right now. Not after.
She sucks in a breath.
That was amazing.
She's slow to sit up, her eyes hazy with pleasure.
I have no idea what else to say. Thank you?
Laughter bubbles in my throat. You're welcome. My legs feel unusually weak as I stand up. I'm still ridiculously hard, but the alarm clock on the night table reveals I have exactly 11 minutes to trek over to the library. Under any other circumstances, I wouldn't care about being late. But this is the last study group before tomorrow's marketing final, and I can't afford to miss it. I'm already going into the exam with a D in the course, so failing the class is both a scary possibility and an outcome I refuse to let happen. The course is a prerequisite for my degree, and I have no desire to retake it next year. I need to go or I'll be late for study group. I meet her eyes. Can I get your number? Her hesitation sparks a pang of anxiety. One of the rare times I ask for a girl's number, and she's uncertain about doling it out, after I rocked her world.
Jesus, is my game slipping?
I raise a brow, my voice taking on a note of challenge. Unless you don't want to give it to me.
No, I mean, yes, I do.
She bites her bottom lip.
Do you want it now?
I force a laugh that I hope sounds flirty rather than nervous. Now would be good. I grab my phone from my back pocket and open a new contact page. Hit me. She rattles off a series of numbers, so fast I have to make her stop and repeat it. I type in her name and press enter, then tuck the phone away. Maybe we can hang out again sometime. We could watch the next Die Hard in the lineup.
Yeah, sure. That sounds great.
Seriously? Another yeah, sure? What the hell does it take to get an I'd love to from this chick? Okay. Cool. I gulp. I guess I'll call you then. She doesn't say anything, and in the ensuing silence, I'm overcome with a wave of discomfort. Then I dip down and do the stupidest thing ever, which says a lot because I've dabbled in my share of stupidity over the years. I kiss her forehead. Not her lips, not her cheek, her fucking forehead. Real smooth, bro. She looks up at me in amusement, but I don't give her the chance to comment on my dumbass move. I'll call you, I mumble. And for the second time in 3 days, I leave Grace's dorm feeling like a jackass.
Grace. My psychology lecture is 3 hours long, and I can honestly say I didn't hear a word the professor said. Not one single word. For 180 minutes, all I did was run through every incredible second of every incredible thing Logan did to me this morning. Can you nominate anyone for sainthood, or are there eligibility requirements? Can you nominate someone's tongue for sainthood? Or maybe there's an orgasm-giving award that the Department of Sexuality hands out? If so, Logan deserves to win it. I'm still flummoxed that he showed up at my door and pretty much demanded I let him give me an orgasm. I guess his ego is as sensitive as that Cosmo article said it would be, but you know what? I found it kind of charming and oddly satisfying that someone as confident as John Logan was actually doubting his sexual prowess. It's funny. Less than a week ago, I was bemoaning the lack of excitement in my life, and now look at me. Sexy hockey players showing up at my door to excite the hell out of me. Fuck it. I'm giving myself the award. Logan continues to dominate my thoughts as I meet Ramona and the girls for lunch, joining them at our usual table against the back wall of the cavernous dining hall. Carver Hall is my favorite place on campus. Whoever constructed it must not have paid attention to the rest of the buildings on campus, though, because Carver has a rustic chalet-style feel to it. High ceilings, wood-paneled walls, and ornate light fixtures that cast a soft yellow glow over the room instead of the fluorescent lighting you find in the other meal halls. And it's only 2 minutes from my dorm, which means I get to bask in its splendor on a daily basis. I set my tray on the table and pop open the tab of my root beer as I sit in an empty chair. "Hey," I greet everyone. "What are we talking about?" Ramona, Jess, and Maya instantly clam up, their expressions taking on secretive gleams that tell me precisely what they were talking about. Me. I narrow my eyes. "What's going on?" Ramona glances over sheepishly. "Okay, so don't be mad, but I told them about Logan." Annoyance spirals through me, but it's mostly directed at myself. I don't know why I bother telling Ramona private things anymore. Asking her to keep a secret is like throwing a ball and asking a dog not to chase it. Well, I threw the damn ball, and now Ramona's scampering back with it. And this year she happened to meet and become BFFs with two girls who gossip even more than she does. Jess and Maya spend so much time dissecting other people's lives, they should create a website and give Perez Hilton some competition. "So is it true?" Jess demands. "Did you seriously hook up with him?" I feel uncomfortable discussing Logan with them, but I know these girls, and they won't let up until I give them something. Trying to appear casual, I twirl some fettuccine around my fork and take a bite. Then I glance at Jess and say, "Yep." "That's it? Yep?" She looks aghast. "That's all you're gonna say?" "I told you guys, she's being super hush-hush about it." Ramona grins. "Obviously, we need to remind Grace about the number one rule of friendship, aka not skimping on details when you made out with the hottest guy on campus." I chew my pasta. I don't kiss and tell. Maya speaks up, a mocking note in her voice. "You know, considering the complete lack of details, one might think it didn't even happen at all." One might think? My head swivels toward Ramona. Unbelievable. Is she spreading that around now? Letting people believe I'm some crazy pathological liar? Ramona is quick to defend herself against my unspoken accusation. "Hey, we cleared that up, remember? I totally believe that you fooled around with him, babe." Twice. The confession slips out before I can stop it. Damn it. Ramona's jaw falls open. "What do you mean, twice?" I shrug. He came over again this morning. That gets me 2 gasps, followed by 2 high-pitched squeals from Jess and Maya. Ramona remains strangely quiet, but when I study her expression, it's impossible to decipher. "Oh my God, he did?" Jess exclaims. "When was this?" Ramona asks. Her tone is way too polite to not raise my hackles. "Right after you left for class. He didn't stay long, though." Her dark eyes stay shuttered. "Did you at least get his number this time?" "No," I admit, "but he has mine now." "So you still have no way of reaching him?" It's not a question. It's not even a particularly pleasant statement. There's an edge to her voice, and when I glance across the table, there's no missing the smirk on Maya's face. They don't believe me. Ramona can deny it until she's blue in the face and backpedal until she's in another state, but my best friend still thinks I'm making it up. And now she's recruiting our friends into doubting me, too. Our friends? The scornful voice raises a good point, and as I think it over, I suddenly can't think of a single person I've hung out with this year that Ramona didn't introduce me to. The one time I invited a few girls from my English lit class to come over, Ramona laughed and chatted with them all night, told them what a fabulous time she had, and then, after they left, informed me they were boring and that I wasn't allowed to bring them over when she was around. Damn it. Why do I let her dictate my life like that? I tolerated it in high school because, hell, I don't even know why I tolerated it. But we're not in high school anymore. This is college, and I should be able to spend time with whoever I want without worrying about what Ramona will think about them. No, I answer through clenched teeth. I have no way of reaching him. But don't worry. I'm sure my imaginary hookup partner will get in touch with me sooner or later. She frowns. Grace, I'm heading back to the dorm to work on my paper. My appetite has disappeared. I pick up my half-eaten dinner tray and rise to my feet. I'll see you later. Maybe I'm naive, but I thought college would be different. I thought all the gossiping and backstabbing and bullshit ceased to exist once you left high school, but I guess mean girls can be found at any level of the education system. It's like visiting a farm. If you go there not expecting to see piles of cow shit everywhere, then you're in for a rude awakening. And there's a good SAT question for you. School is to mean girls as farms are to blank. Shit. The answer to that is shit. Ramona catches up to me the moment I burst outside, her heels clicking on the limestone entrance as she hurries toward me. Grace, wait! My jaw tenses as I turn around. What now? Panic lights her eyes. Please don't be pissed at me. I hate it when you're pissed at me. Gee, I'm sorry you're upset, Ramona. What can I do to make you feel better? Her bottom lip quivers. You don't have to be sarcastic. I came out here to apologize. For fuck's sake, if she launches into her whole crocodile tears act, I might actually lose my shit. I'm not having this conversation with you again, I say in a cold voice. I don't care if you think I'm lying. I know I'm not. And that's all that matters to me, okay? Just know that I find it incredibly insulting that my best friend, since I was 6 years old, believes I'm jealous, she blurts out. I stop talking. What? Her face collapses as our gazes lock. She lowers her voice, then repeats herself. I'm jealous, all right? Hell must have frozen over. There's no other explanation for what I'm hearing, because in 13 years of friendship, Ramona has never admitted to being jealous of me. I've been trying to get with Dean all year. she laments. All fucking year, and he doesn't know I exist, and you just hook up with his best friend without even trying. An oddly vulnerable look softens her features. I've been acting like a total bitch, and I'm so sorry. I was insecure, and I took it out on you, and that wasn't fair, but please don't be angry with me. It's your birthday on Wednesday. I want to celebrate with you, and I want us to be good again, and I interrupt with a sigh. We're good, Ramona. We are. The anger that had been flowing so freely through my veins dissipates as I glimpse her hopeful expression. This is the Ramona I invested 13 years of my life for. The girl who listened to me babble for hours about my high school crushes, who brought my assignments home whenever I was sick, who taught me how to put on makeup, and threatened to kick the ass of anyone who so much as looked at me the wrong way. She might be self-absorbed and shallow at times, but she's also fiercely loyal and unbelievably kind when she drops that bad girl bitch act. All the bullshit with Jess and Maya back there still stings, but I can't bring myself to throw away years' worth of friendship over something so trivial. We're good, I assure her. I promise. A brilliant smile fills her face. Good. She flings her arms around my waist and bear hugs the hell out of me. Now, let's go home so you can tell me every dirty thing John Logan did to you this morning in explicit detail.
Chapter 8. Logan. I drive to Munson on Wednesday morning. My enthusiasm level sitting firmly on its usual spot on the super happy fun time scale. 0. It's rare that I'm forced to go home during the school year, but sometimes I have no choice. Usually it happens if the part-time mechanic at my dad's shop can't cover for Jeff when he takes dad to his doctor's appointments. Today is one of those instances, but I assure myself that I can handle a couple hours of oil changes and tune-ups without losing my mind. Besides, it'll be a good warm-up for the summer. I tend to forget how much I hate working in the garage. So on that first day back, it's like being sent to the front lines of a war zone. My stomach drops, and fear pummels into me as I realize that this will be my life for the next 3 months. At least if I dip my toes in today, I can get some of the panic out of the way. Jeff's van is already gone when I park my pickup in front of Logan and Son's Auto Repair. The name is kind of ironic, seeing as the shop was already called that long before my parents ever had kids. My granddad ran the place before my dad took over, and I guess he'd been hoping to sire a lot of strapping male offspring. He only sired one, though, so technically the place should be called Logan and Son. The shop consists of one small brick building, the interior of which only has room for 2 lifts. But the meager square footage doesn't really impact the business since it's not exactly booming. L&S does well enough to cover expenses, my dad's bills, and the mortgage on our bungalow, which sits at the back of the property. Growing up, I hated that our house was so close to the shop. We used to get woken up in the middle of the night by customers pounding on our door because their car broke down nearby, or by phone calls from the tow truck company saying they were bringing over a vehicle. Since my dad's accident, the close proximity has actually become convenient, because it means he can get from home to work in less than a minute. Not that he spends much time in the garage anymore. Jeff is the one who does all the work, while Dad drinks himself stupid on the living room recliner. I walk up to the dented metal door, which is shut and locked. A lined piece of paper sticks to it with a jagged strip of duct tape, and I instantly recognize my brother's handwriting. You're late. 2 words, all caps. Shit. Jeff was pissed. I use my set of keys to unlock the side door, then step inside and hit the button that sends the huge mechanical door soaring upward. It's still cold out, but I always keep the door open, no matter how frigid the weather is. It's my one requirement for working here. After a while, the overpowering odor of oil and car exhaust makes me want to kill myself. Jeff has left me a list of tasks, but luckily it's not too long. The older model Buick parked on the concrete needs an oil change and a headlight replaced. Easy peasy. I throw on a blue jumpsuit with the L&S logo on the back, turn the radio dial to the first metal station I find, and get right to work. An hour passes before I take my first break. I chug water from the sink in the office, then pop outside for a quick cigarette. I've just snubbed the butt out beneath my steel-toed boot when the sound of an engine hums in the distance. My chest tightens when I glimpse the front bumper of my brother's white van slicing through the trees that line the long driveway. Like a coward, I duck back inside and race to the raised hood of the Buick. I bend over and pretend to give the engine a spot check, while also pretending I'm too focused on my work to notice the car doors slamming, and my dad's harsh voice as he snaps something at my brother. I hear two sets of footsteps, one slow and laborious, leading away from the dirt driveway, the other a fast, angry thump as Jeff storms into the garage. "You couldn't come over and say hello to him?" my older brother demands irritably. I straighten up and close the hood. "Sorry, I was finishing up. I'll stop by the house before I go." "You better, because he just gave me shit for it. And I'm not even the one who didn't say hello." Jeff's dark eyebrows draw together in a displeased frown. He looks like he wants to lecture me some more, so I speedily change the subject before he can. "So what did the doctor say?" Jeff responds in a flat voice. "He needs to stop drinking, or he's going to die." I can't help but snort. Fat chance of him stopping. "Of course he won't stop. He's drinking to die." Jeff angrily shakes his head. "Before the accident, it was an addiction. Now I think it's a purpose." Jesus, I've never heard a more depressing assessment in my life. I can't argue, though. The accident really was the game changer. It had pushed my dad right off the wagon and pretty much erased all those years of sobriety. Good years, damn it. 3 whole years of having a father again. When I was 14, Dad's latest stint in rehab had miraculously stuck. He'd been sober for an entire year before Mom left, which was the only reason she agreed to let us stay with him. During the divorce, we had a choice about which parent to live with. And since Jeff didn't want to change schools and refused to leave his girlfriend, he chose to stay with our dad. And I chose to stay with my older brother. Not only because I idolized him, but because when we were little, the two of us made a promise to always watch each other's backs. Dad had stayed sober for 2 more years after that, but I guess the universe decided that the Logan family wasn't allowed to be happy, because when I was 16, my father was involved in a massive car accident on his way back from dropping us off in Boston to see our mom. Both his legs were crushed, and I mean crushed. He was lucky to escape without being paralyzed. He was in a shit ton of pain, but the doctors were hesitant to prescribe painkillers to a man with a destructive history of addiction. They said he needed to be monitored 24/7, so Jeff left college to come home and help me take care of him. Mom's new husband offered to take out a loan in order to hire someone to care for Dad, but we assured David that we could handle it, because at the time, we honestly believed we could. Dad's legs would heal, and if he went to physical therapy like the doctors had instructed, then he might be able to walk normally one day. But again, the universe had another fuck you for the Logans. Dad was in so much agony that he turned to drinking to numb the pain. He also didn't finish his PT, which means his legs didn't heal the way they were supposed to. So now he has a bad limp, constant pain, and 2 sons who have resigned themselves to the fact that they'll be taking care of him until the day he dies. "What do we do?" I ask grimly. "Same thing we've always done. We man up and take care of our family." Frustration twists my gut, tangling with the pretzel of guilt already lodged there. Why is it our job to sacrifice everything for him? "Because he's your father, and he's sick. Because your mother had to do it for 14 years, and now it's your turn." Another thought bubbles to the surface, one I've had before, and which makes me want to throw up every time it enters my mind. Things would be so much easier if he died. As bile burns my throat, I banish the selfish, disgusting notion. I don't want him to die. He might be a mess. He might be a drunk and an asshole sometimes, but he's still my father, damn it. He's the man who drove me to hockey practice, rain or shine, who helped me memorize my multiplication tables, and taught me how to tie my shoes. When he was sober, he was a really good dad. And that just makes this whole situation so much fucking worse. Because I can't hate him. I don't hate him. Listen, I've been thinking. I trail off, too afraid of Jeff's reaction. Coughing, I fish another cigarette out of the pack and head for the door. Let's talk outside for a sec. A moment later, I take a deep drag of my smoke, hoping the nicotine will bring me a much-needed dose of confidence. Jeff eyes me in disapproval before releasing a defeated sigh. Give me one of those. As he lights up, I exhale a cloud of smoke and force myself to continue. I've had some interest from an agent in New York. This really big sports agent. I hesitate. He thinks I'll have no trouble signing with a team if I test out free agency. Jeff's features instantly harden. That could mean a decent signing bonus. And a contract. Money, Jeff. Desperation tightens my throat. We could hire someone else to run the garage. A full-time nurse for Dad. Maybe even pay off the house if the contract is big enough. My brother barks out a derisive laugh. How big a contract do you think you'll actually land, John? Let's be serious here. He shakes his head. Look, we talked about this. If you wanted to go pro, you should have gone the major junior route. But you wanted the college degree. You can't have it both ways. Yeah, I did choose the degree. Because I knew damn well that if I picked the alternative, I'd never leave the league. And that would mean screwing over my brother. They would have had to pry that hockey stick out of my cold, dead hands to stop me from playing. But now that the time for Jeff and me to trade places is drawing near, I'm terrified. It could be a lot of money, I mumble. But my feeble attempt to convince him doesn't work. Jeff is already shaking his head. No way, Johnny. We had a deal. Even if you signed with a team, you wouldn't get all that money up front, and it would take time to get everything here in order. I don't have time, okay? The second they slap that diploma in your hand, I'm out of here. Oh, come on. You expect me to believe you're just going to skip town at the drop of a hat? Kylie and I are leaving for Europe next May. Jeff says quietly. We'll be gone the day after your graduation. Surprise slams into me. Since when? We've been planning this for a long time. I already told you. We want to travel for a couple of years before we get married. And then we want to spend some time in Boston before we look for a place in Hastings. My panic intensifies. But that's still your plan, right? Living in Hastings and working here? That was the deal we'd struck after I graduated high school. Jeff mans the fort while I'm in college, and then I take over for a few years before he and his fiancée settle down in the area, at which point he'll run the shop again, and I'll be free. Granted, I'll also be 25 by then, and the odds of playing professional hockey won't be as favorable. Yeah, I might land in the AHL somewhere. But I don't know how many NHL teams would be interested in taking me on at that point. It's still the plan, he assures me. Kylie wants to live in a small town and raise our kids here, and I like being a mechanic. Well, that makes one of us. I don't mind taking care of Dad either. He breathes heavily. I just need a break, okay? My throat is clamped shut, so I settle for a nod. Then I put out my smoke and force a smile, finally finding my voice. I still need to change that headlight. Better get back to it. We walk inside, Jeff heading for the office while I wander back to the Buick. 15 minutes later, I hang up my coveralls on one of the hooks on the wall, call out a hasty goodbye, and practically sprint to my pickup. Hoping like hell my brother doesn't realize I didn't say hello to our father. Chapter 9. Logan. All I want to do tonight is sprawl on the couch and watch the first playoffs game of the season. I don't even care that Boston isn't playing. I'll watch any game you put in front of me during the postseason. Nothing gets your blood going and heart racing more than playoffs hockey. Dean, however, has other plans. He waits for me in the hall when I leave the bathroom after my shower, his green eyes narrowed in impatience.
Jesus Christ, bro. What the hell were you doing in there? Shaving your legs?
13-year-old girls take shorter showers than that. I was literally in there for 5 minutes. I brush past him and duck into my bedroom, but he follows me in. No sense of boundaries, this one.
Hurry up and get dressed. We're going to a movie, and I don't want to miss the previews.
I stare at him. Are you asking me out on a date? That gets me a middle finger.
You wish.
No, you wish, apparently. I grab a pair of boxers from the top drawer and shoot him a pointed look. Do you mind?
Seriously? I've seen your cock hundreds of times in the locker room. Get dressed already.
He folds his arms over his chest and taps his foot. Go away. I'm watching the Red Wings game tonight.
Aw, come on, you don't even like Detroit.
And it's half-price ticket night at the theater. I've been waiting like a week to see this Statham movie just so we could go tonight. Now I'm gaping at him. Because is he for real?
Hey, asshole, you're filthy rich. If anyone should be paying full price for movie tickets, it's you.
I was being nice, asshole. Waiting for the cheap day so you'd be able to afford it. Then he flashes his trademark grin, the one that makes chicks drop their panties and dive onto his dick. Don't give me your sex grin. It's creeping me out. His mouth stays frozen in the sex grin position.
I'll stop smiling like this if you agree to be my date tonight.
You're the most annoying person. The grin widens, and he even throws a little wink in there. 10 minutes later, we're out the door. The movie theater in Hastings only has 3 screens and carries 1 new release a week, which really limits the selection. Luckily for Dean, the Jason Statham movie he's got a hard-on for is playing there. Dean's a huge Statham fan. If someone told me he stands in front of his mirror speaking in a British accent and pretends to transport things around his bedroom, I'd buy it. I'm still not in the mood to see a movie. But after Dean twisted my arm, I realized that getting out of the house might not be the worst idea. Hannah usually comes by after work on Wednesdays, so hopefully she and Garrett will already be asleep by the time Dean and I get home. And yes, I know her work schedule. Sad, pathetic loser that I am. On the bright side, I haven't been obsessing over her as much as usual. The person who monopolized my thoughts